You're listening to the Bearded Theologians podcast, hosted by Zach Bechtold and Matt Franks. If you'd like to learn more about the Bearded Theologians, you can go online at beardedtheologians.com, where we have past podcasts, blogs, and a couple of items for sale. So check us out, beardedtheologians.com. Thank you for listening and enjoy this week's show.
You're listening to the Bearded Theologians podcast, hosted by Matt Franks
and Zach Bechtold. And today we have another just special episode and special guest. We have the most wonderful Rachel Billups with us today. Rachel, thank you for being with us.
I am excited.
Yeah, we are too. Why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself? You know, who you are, where you're from, all that kind of stuff.
What I'm doing? Well, currently I am serving in New Albany, Ohio, at New Albany United Methodist Church. I'm the senior pastor here. I am just having a blast, and we can talk more about that. My claim to fame today is that my senior is directing Mean Girls tonight. She is the stage manager for Mean Girls tonight, and so I'm super pumped about that. She is the oldest of my four children. 18, 15, 10, and 6. Yeah, I kept signing up, just kept signing up. And I'm married to my high school sweetheart of 22 years, John Billups, who is a football coach and he is a PE teacher. So, and he looks just like Coach Beard, and that's why I have this mug. I bought it for him. So, nice. So yeah, that's me.
Yeah. My hope in this life is to be Coach Beard. Everybody wants Ted Lasso. No, I want Coach Beard.
No, he's pretty amazing. So yeah. Yes. And seriously, if you just Google a picture of the two of us together, you're like, oh snap. She's not nice. Kidding. She's not kidding.
Love it. Love it. Well, thank you for being on with us. We know you're doing lots of super cool things that we will get to throughout this conversation, but most importantly, you have an Advent book out.
I do.
Yeah. So would you tell us a little bit about that?
Absolutely. So a couple of years ago, you know how these things work, Abingdon approached me and said, are you interested in writing an Advent book? And I said, absolutely. Under one condition, as long as I don't have to compete against Matt Farrell. I was like, he's my bestie. He's got 17,000 books out. Like, I just really don't want to do that. And they were like, absolutely not. Like, it's fine. Like, you write. And so I signed the contract, and 2 weeks later, Matt called me and said, I'm writing. And I was like, son of a, you know, like, I was like, really? So, but what I will say about that is, like in most things in ministry, I'm a collaborative human being. I just think like this solo hero leadership BS in the church world is something that is behind us. And we need people, we need partners, we need friends. And so Matt has really been in this journey. We've been in this journey together and we've had a lot of fun. And it does really help that I'm kicking his butt this time. So, and so, but anyhow, about an unlikely Advent, when I was thinking about what I wanted to write about, I was thinking about like the nativity set, you know, and the nativity scene and all of the people that just don't make the scene, particularly. I was thinking about Elizabeth and Zechariah and Herod. Ain't nobody includes a Herod in their nativity scene. And so I started to really dig a little deeper into these, what I call sidekicks or B players in our Christmas story. And what I realized is I think sometimes those particular characters of the Christmas story have more to tell us about ourselves than maybe Mary, Joseph, or baby Jesus. So it was just it was a deep dive into some of those characters and a lot of fun in the process. Now, the other piece about my book, I always say it kind of was a Kairos moment because I'm writing about Advent. And when you're writing about Advent and Jesus's birth and all of that kind of thing, you can't help but like think about the Holy Land. And I had just been on a trip with my mama in the Holy Land a few months earlier. And so that trip became the sub theme of my book. Now I want to talk a little bit about that because how we even got into that trip is absolutely fascinating. In the January of 2021, you know, it's COVID, everybody's really tired. I mean, I'm thinking to myself, I just need to go somewhere where I can get a little like pick me up. And I'm dreaming of like a beach and sunshine, because even though it's sunny right today, I mean, it is November in Ohio and it's 65 degrees. It's never 65 degrees and the sun's out. And that is just a miracle of God. Can we just thank God for this miracle today? And so like, but in January in Ohio, it is 50 shades of gray, right? Like I shouldn't say it that way, right? It's just gray all the time. And so it is so fantastically gray. And I wanted to go somewhere amazing and sunny. And I wanted to take my mama with me. And I said, Mom, you want to go on a trip with me? And she's like, what are you thinking? And I was telling her about all the sunshiny places I wanted to go. And she was like, cool. No, I don't want to go to any of those places. She's like, Rachel, I only have one place I want to go. And that's the Holy Land. And she's like, I want to do this before I die. And I was like, the Holy Land. And she's like, yeah. And she's like, dogged determination. She's like, I don't want to hear anything else. And so I said to her, okay, mama, you know, like sometimes pastor types like myself, we get those opportunities every once in a while. And then she started talking. My mom, when she was growing up, wanted to be a missionary. Now I grew up like in the foothills of Appalachia in Southern Ohio. And the only time my mom had ever traveled on a plane in her entire lifetime was in 1972, when she went to visit her then boyfriend, who is my father, at Lackland Air Force Base in San Antonio, Texas. One time in her entire life. And so she grew up in this place where people didn't travel. It's not like the desire wasn't there. It's just that like somehow she was equating this trip of a lifetime to the Holy Land with like traveling the world on behalf of God. And so, and when she would talk about it, like her desire to be a missionary, she would be like, well, Rach, I guess it wasn't in the cards. You know, life happened. I had you children and I married your dad and like, he wasn't going to do that. And so like life just happened. And so there was this sense in which she had a dream that was deferred, this dream that was all but lost. And that's how I feel like, that's how I introduced chapter one with that story, because that's Zachariah and Elizabeth. They had this dream. They want to have family. They wanted to have children, and just didn't seem like it was in the card. And so here's the, I mean, it's just a beautiful way to think about, I've already had people reaching out to me of all ages saying, oh my goodness, I had a dream. And I read that chapter one and I thought to myself, I've retired and now I want to write a book. How do I do it? I've done that. I've been thinking about this my whole life. How do I get there? So it's just really interesting. That felt need of dreaming forward and having hope really does hit a lot of people right between the eyes, particularly after a season where we've been in crisis mode and we've forgotten how to dream. So, the other piece that's really interesting about this book, I dedicated this book to my mama. What I couldn't have known, what I didn't know, is I turn in the rough draft, the first draft, February 1st. And February 9th, she was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. And for the last year, I've been journeying with my mom through this pancreatic cancer journey. I've had a front row seat. And the book comes out, like I get the author copy in like September. Late August, early September. And I give her a copy because she wants one right away. Cause I mean, it's her story. It's my story. And she struggles to read it because she's at the point in her cancer journey that it's just tough. And so 2 weeks before my mom dies in the hospital, I read the book to her. And so like, I could pinch myself that this is like the final gift I could give to my mom. So yeah. It's unlikely Advent. It's an unlikely story. And Advent is still unlikely this year for me as well. So it's just been this like unbelievable journey of like writing and being in ministry and real life, all kind of in some kind of Advent Christmas brew, if you will, that I'm kind of living out. So yeah, that's kind of how I'm coming into this story. And I'm praying that as people read it, they can just feel that admiration and feel themselves in this story as well. So yeah, how's that for an introduction?
I don't know that we've ever cried on the podcast, but damn.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. So deeply. And I mean, where to even start, right? I love the idea that you're taking a look at all of the side players, right? The people who have significant pieces in the story, but get overlooked, right? Because they're not, they're not the end goal, right? But but they're so important. Without them, we have gaps, and maybe the story isn't as right. It just is. It's a story at that point, right? So it takes the fullness of all of it. But I love the idea of the unlikely advent for exactly the reasons you just said of, I don't know what's before me this year. It's different. Yeah. My mother-in-law passed away five years ago now, at the first week of Advent, and Advent and Christmas were her favorite things. And I deeply feel that I don't know what this is.
Yeah.
And I don't know what this looks like or feels like, but it's coming. And I love that about the whole Advent story of, this is crazy. It's a lot, and we don't know what is before us, but yet there's so much hope in the midst of grief and joy in the midst of life and all of those things, right? And so I love drawing that out in different ways. And the most unlikely of people, that's not a snuggly little baby in a manger, right? No. I love that part of the story.
Yeah.
But there's so much in that unlikely piece that leans into Jesus, that leans into what Advent and Christmas are.
We are really quick to get to the Jesus part. You know, like we're like, okay, let's rush through. Let's hurry through and let's get to Christmas Eve where we can light those bits of wax and everybody can sing Silent Night and everybody's happy, you know, but I just wanted to take time to really like just savor these stories. And do we really think about the kind of circumstances that people found themselves in? Now, my absolute favorite chapter in the book is chapter 2, which is on Herod, because ain't no one loves Herod. And actually, like, Abingdon was like, no one has ever written a chapter in any, like, yes, mention Herod, but written an entire chapter on Herod in an Advent book, you're just not going to see it. And honestly, again, this Holy Land experience, I happened to be on the top of Masada, Herod's desert fortress. I have so many funny stories about that. I'm such an eager human being. There's an opportunity for you to like climb up, like take the stairs. And I really, really wanted to take the stairs because I'm an achiever. Like I'm an achiever. And I'm like, if I'm going to be at Masada, I want to do like the whole thing. And it was like 101 degrees that day, like the hot, like hot. And our guy and the people with me were a little more seasoned than me. I was the youngest person by like 30 plus years. I mean, like, let's just be honest. And so the guide was like, no, Rachel, you're not doing that. And besides, if you climb, you're not going to have time to climb and do the viewing at the same time. So I reluctantly ride the gondola all the way up. And then it just gets higher and higher and higher and higher until I want to puke. And I'm like, oh, sweet Jesus, thank God I didn't climb this. So anyhow, we get to the top and we're in what was conceivably Herod's palace. It's not clear whether Herod actually ever visited the palace. You know, he just built these things and whether he used them or not is not historically clear. But so I just imagine myself, I'm overlooking what would have been like, I'm on a veranda overlooking like what it would have been like the Dead Sea. And I'm looking at all of this and I'm like, holy shit. Like, no wonder this guy thought he was powerful. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're standing there like in this like luxury on top of this plateau in the middle of the desert. And you did all of this. You constructed all of this. Like, I realized like the seduction of power is real. And so I began to ask myself the question, like, is there truly a Herod in us all? Like, and really what made Herod Herod? Thinking about, it makes me think about the many circumstances that people find themselves in, what happened in his childhood. And as you start looking at like his history and the fact that his own family members were like warring against him and he had them all executed. And even his like favorite wife, he has executed and he kills his heir apparent 5 days before he dies. I mean, all of this, like, it's got all the drama, but you begin to ask the question, what happens in a person's life to make them that vile, that ruthless, that cruel kind of a thing? And so I just explore all of that in the book, in my own moments of being vile and cruel. And I tell a story of middle school. Everybody has a crappy middle school moment. I always tell people, like, when I think of middle school, I think of a picture of hell. Like, that's what middle school is. You know, it's just a picture of hell. People not ever feeling like they fit in. It's awkward. It's just all of those kinds of things. And I remember in middle school being the kind of person that, like, I gave my friends nicknames. And I want to say, like, they were kind and sweet and endearing. But no, they were bullshit. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they were absolutely cruel. And this one particular classmate of mine, like, I'd make signs and put them on her back. I even had a little jingle, like, all these things that I would do. And I realized as an adult, you do those things because you're trying to feel better. You're trying to fit in. You're just trying to, like, navigate your world. And in that, like, trying to, like, make your way to the top of middle school, you destroy people in the process. Mm-hmm. Is that not what Herod did at an extreme level, you know? Right. And so just being honest with ourselves and vulnerable. So I'm not going to tell this whole story because it's in the book and you should read the book because this story is just ridiculous. But I got myself into, at New Albany, I used to be the senior pastor at Ginghamsburg Church. And so at Ginghamsburg, we always had a Christmas miracle offering. And in New Albany, I started helping people understand the need for a Christmas miracle offering. And so we were focusing in on Kindway Prison Ministry. Kindway Prison Ministry is this ministry that really does focus in on helping people who've been incarcerated for years re-enter into society. Mm-hmm. And the recidivism rate in Ohio is almost 33%. It's 32.7%. So if you get out of prison, almost 33% likely that you're going to reoffend and come back and be in prison. So in Kindway, in their Embark program, that includes, like, the program that you do in prison and then hanging out with them for a year after you're out, if you completed that entire program, their recidivism rate is less than 2%, 1.5%, less than 2. So from 33 to 2. Mm-hmm. And I was just enamored by all of this. Like, okay, let's. And so I was listening. There are a couple of former inmates, people who've been in the program, who are with me, talking with me, and the director, Chris Money is her name. She's the director of the program, of the entirety of the Kindway program. And so we were just talking about all of this, and they're sharing their stories. And there's a guy named Stan Stever. And Stan is sharing his story. And I'm like, oh my gosh, my people need to hear his story. My people need to hear his story. I'm like super excited about it. And I invite him to come during the Herod week because, oh my gosh, you know, someone who's been incarcerated, we have all of these feels about people who've been incarcerated. This is perfect. One for one. He's a Herod of sorts. And so I invite him and I've heard like this much of his story. And so I'm like, just asking him questions and I'm interviewing him. And I'm like, he's talking about this thing that I talk about, limitation prophecies that are spoken over you, like I did in middle school and like we do to ourselves and other people. And he's talking about being, he's talking about being bullied as a kid. And, you know, in the fourth grade, in the third grade, I was bullied and I just got angrier and angrier. And he was like, my violence, you know, I was lashing out and I was getting in trouble. And at first, you know, I wasn't super violent, but it just escalated. And then he said something along the lines of, in 1987, I didn't mean to, but I took someone's life. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh shit. Cause I didn't know that part. Right. Now logic would tell you that, like, if someone is incarcerated for 34 years, they've done something, right? Mm-hmm. But like, I'm all like jolly and naive. And in that moment, I'm like, how on earth are my people going to receive this? Mm-hmm. And you have to read my book. And that, if you don't get my book for any other reason, you got to read the rest of that story and Stan's story, because like all heaven broke loose that day. Mm-hmm. Like it was just, and even I love it. I love it when my people are honest and they come to me and they said, man, I really struggled with that, because I was broken into, or my family had this experience or that. And so I see I see Jesus in that man. And I'm going, I don't know if I want to extend grace. I don't know if I'm ready to extend the scandal of God's love to a Stan, to a Herod. So it was just really like, I'm just messing with people. That's what I do. I just mess with people. And I mess with myself in the process to say, ooh, do I actually believe in the power of God's grace? Fun to say, great to preach about, but do I actually believe it, even for the Herods of this world? And why on earth would the God of the universe include someone like Herod in the story of the redemption of all of creation? Mm-hmm. Why? We don't, how often do we meditate on that during Advent? I would say rarely. So anyhow.
Rarely, right. Yeah. I would venture to say most often week two of Advent is the opposite in John the yeah. Baptizer going out and being like, hey, you people, figure it out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was trying to rack my brain. Like, have I ever done that other than when we do the telling of the story at Christmas Eve? But right. that only gets a little blurb, but nothing to sit on and to wrestle with and to provide that space to like really ask ourselves, like in our Advent space, like how are we Herod? Like how do we connect with this character that, like you said earlier, that you know, I'd be intrigued to see what a Herod nativity scene figure would look like.
I was going to say, that's the what I want to know. I hope there's a picture in the book, like at the beginning of the chapter where it's Herod all hunched over.
Well, there's not. But let me say this. There is a story in the book that I tell. I'm part of this covenant group of clergy women. And I was talking to them about this. And my friend sends me a picture of a Herod figurine that a little guy in her congregation got her because he was like, no one talks about Herod. And he, I don't know if he Amazoned it or whatever, but it looks like the Burger King. Like, honestly, that's what it looks like. It looks like the Burger King. And I was like, well, I got to get me one of those. I'm hoping someone ships me a Herod. That's like goal of the year. Like, ship me a Herod. That's what I want.
Well, I can assure you, you may get a Burger King bobblehead that we've painted to look like
it. And just write Herod at the bottom, like scratch it out and write Herod at the bottom.
It's so good. Yeah.
I was trying to think in my, you know, in my kids, like VeggieTale, you know, like plush, what would a Herod vegetable be?
Yes. Oh, I'm sure that they, come on there. I'm thinking about all the, I've watched a few VeggieTales in my day and like, I just don't remember a Herod.
Right.
I'm sure there's gotta be one, right? There's gotta be. Anyhow.
It had to be. And it would have to be something like Brussels sprouts or.
It's asparagus. It's always the asparagus.
Yeah, that's true.
Asparagus always has to play the villain. And that's I think there's a direct correlation. Kids hate asparagus. So therefore it's gotta be a yucky vegetable to children.
Right. But if you wrap asparagus and bacon, right? It would be, can yeah, be the I grace was like, of redeeming well, asparagus.
Now be honest with yourself. Like I love asparagus. I love asparagus. But like even as a child, if you wrapped asparagus and bacon, are you still going to eat it? And the answer is firmly no.
You just take the bacon off and eat it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, exactly. I can definitely see my children like taking the bacon off and eating the bacon. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's fun.
Yeah. And so anyhow, let me just share with you two more things, like the Please. Two more chapters, just so that everybody knows, like, it's not just two chapters and it's, and I'll be brief about it. But, so the third chapter is about the Magi and probably the reason that I feel so deeply connected to the Magi, in some of my research, you know, there are these possibilities of who the Magi could be, Persian kind of priest, if you will. There's also this strand that thinks like they might be some kind of like fire god, like Persian fire god. And I'm a person that is obsessed with fire. Like I build a fire every other day. Like if I can burn something, it's like my happy place, like just burning stuff. If you look at my social media, you're like, oh, sweet Jesus, that woman, she's burning again. And I also think it's so fascinating that we equate fire with hell. Because if you look throughout the entirety of the Old Testament, God is equated with fire all the time. So anyway, so I'm thinking about these Persian fire gods and I'm always like, were they fire breathers? Did they walk on coals? I mean, like what did they do? But again, thinking about all of that and here are these people, they get it. Like the religious elites don't get it. You know, Herod, who has all this authority and power and privilege in Rome, with Rome and with Judea, doesn't get it. But these foreign priests, they're like praying. They're being led by the Spirit. They are worshiping this toddler, most likely toddler Jesus. And so in that story, I'm asking myself and others the question, like, who have you crossed off of God's list because you think they're outside the people of God? Like, who have you crossed off your Christmas guest list? And I use the table as a symbolic way to think about that. Who have you uninvited from the table? Mm-hmm. Or who would just scare the bejesus out of you to invite them over for Christmas dinner because they just are outside the people of God. So, and then, so it's called A Curious People, that chapter. And then the last chapter is when God shows up. And I talk about the shepherds. I love, now I realize sometimes the shepherds and sometimes the magi are included in some nativity sets. I get it. The shepherds in particular, like I so relate to the shepherds because I grew up, my dad and mom, my dad worked for, he was in the Air Force and then he worked for DuPont factory work. And when he was working for DuPont for 30 years, he worked 12-hour swing shifts, sometimes evenings, sometimes mornings. And so there were just a lot of Christmases where dad was either just coming home or we had to get up at the butt crack of dawn because he was like leaving for his 12-hour shift. And so just thinking about like, so when I think of the shepherds, I think of my dad. I think about all those people who have to work through the night, who have to leave their families, who have to do all those kinds of things. And so, and how we don't expect God to show up in the mundane. Okay, God, show up when I light these candles on Christmas Eve or when we're worshiping, but like in our ordinary life, do we actually expect God to show up? And then this is my confessional. As I'm preaching through these messages, because I preached through these messages last Advent, I was preaching kind of an extra bonus message on expecting the unexpected, because these are 4 weeks and, you know, with Christmas Eve, I have five. That's how you do that. That's right. How it works. But I was preaching this bonus episode about expecting the unexpected. And I'm telling a story about like getting diverted and all that. And Friday before I'm supposed to preach this, I'm with my little girl. So I have 1,000 stories about how like life doesn't always like hand you like gold stars, even for, you know, some people like probably think about my life. I was the senior pastor at Ginghamsburg and I write books and I speak across the country, blah, blah, blah. Life must be really easy for her. And that is just crap because it's not. And I was telling someone this story yesterday, talking about like, I imagine there are a lot of pastor types, people working in churches, they're just tired. You're tired and you're weary. And there's a lack of hope because we just been through some stuff. Can we just be honest? We've been through some stuff. And sometimes you're in churches where people are mean. Can we just say that people are sometimes mean? And because they went through stuff too, and they're going to take it out on you because you're like an easy target. And so you're sitting here in all of this yuck. And I think about like, I always say I experienced a pandemic before the pandemic. Mike Slaughter retired. We had an incidental interim pastor that left kind of suddenly. That's a whole story and it's of itself. I was the interim senior pastor. I became the senior pastor. In that time frame, we had 15 tornadoes rip through the Dayton, Ohio area. And so we were like, particularly in our urban campuses, we were like ground zero for some of this work that we were doing with tornadoes. And so two of my associate pastors were really burning out. And then I had, we had a shooting in the Oregon district in Dayton. 9 people were killed, like 21 injured. A mass shooting on a Saturday night before a Sunday morning. And oh, by the way, there were all these pastors from base camp at Ginghamsburg from all over the country. I mean, it was just kind of a mess. And then I had some more personnel messes throughout that. And then 2019 is over, not to mention all the denominational stuff. Right. 2019 is over. It's 2020. I'm really pumped. I'm like, it's going to be a new year, a fresh start for our church family. And then the pandemic hits. And at the end of, and so I have to weather this megachurch through a pandemic, which worked out. It worked out, but it's not like for everyone. It's just hard. Let's say it was hard. And this trip that I took to the Holy Land with my mama got postponed five times before we ever took it. And so, so all these like disappointments and delays and trips canceled and all this kind of stuff. And then I get to about Holy Week of 2022. And I've been at Ginghamsburg for 8 years. I'm not planning on going anywhere for all kinds of missional reasons. But I also know like no one will leave me alone. Like the bishop never, like, it's always like, hey, will you do this? No, like I need to stay at Ginghamsburg, or I get recruited like every other month. And I'm like, I got to stay at Ginghamsburg. And so, well, my youngest daughter, her name is Sarah. And Sarah goes to an eye doctor appointment, and the eye doc is like, man, can't get a good reading on her eyes. Your five-year-old might have cataracts. And we're like, oh, weird. She's like, if I were you, I'd go to a pediatric ophthalmologist. So we go, and I don't even go because my husband's off work for spring break. He takes her, and because we just think cataracts, right? And he takes her, and he's there forever in the waiting room and like 3 minutes with the doc. And he texts me and he says, the doc thinks she has Marfan syndrome. And I'm like, great, we have an answer. And he's like, did you Google that? And so I was like, no. So I Google it. And Marfan syndrome is a rare genetic disorder that affects every tissue in your body. Mm-hmm. And I am in a puddle on the ground because I'm like, oh crap, including your heart, by the way. And so we go through this journey very quickly where we're seeing a geneticist and she's having a echocardiogram. And sure enough, she has a dilated aorta and she has Marfan. And so that's when I phoned a friend and said, what's out there? Because I need flexibility. I need this kid at a better children's hospital. Dayton Children's is fantastic, but more specialized medicine. So at the end of all of that, it feels like my gift at the end of all of that is this child with a genetic disorder. Now that's not my theology. I don't believe that, right?
Right.
And yet at the same time, I'm like, what's going on? And so my friend is, to be honest, there was a conference job, like a what we call a regional missional specialist job that was out there. And I was asking my friend about it. And she's like, Rachel, you don't need that job. Number one, it's a heck of a pay cut. And number two, you will die. You're a people person and it's isolating. Mm-hmm. But the senior pastor at New Albany has just at the last minute decided to retire. And New Albany, do you know anything about New Albany? And of course I did. New Albany is the place where Intel is putting their $20 billion chip plant that President Biden was talking about, that State of the Union address. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I was like, tell me more. Cause my heart was strangely warmed, Wesleyans, right? My heart was strangely warmed. And I was like, hey, tell me more about this place. And she was like, oh my goodness, they just built a new sanctuary. I was like, in the middle of COVID? That is insane. And so I said, don't tell me anything else. I don't want to know how many people go there. I don't want to know the budget. I don't want to know what worship is like, because if I know any of those things, I will not go. But this feels like a God call. And in like 10 days, I was meeting with their SPRC, their HR, right? And saying, I'm going to be the next senior pastor at New Albany. And it has been a blast. Now, let me say, my daughter has had two eye surgeries because we didn't even know she was legally blind at the time, mm-hmm. and is now seeing like 20/50. So it's just been, so we've been to a place, this church has just loved on my family. They have certainly just been exceptional throughout my mom's cancer journey. I mean, just like I had so many carbs for so many weeks coming into my house, and like people just giving us DoorDash and all this kind of stuff, just making sure that sending my kids gifts because they knew grief doesn't just affect mama. It affects mm-hmm. all of these. I don't think I've experienced a more loving congregation in my life. Not to say like I've experienced wonderful mm-hmm. congregations, every single one of my congregations, but this has been, and oh, by the way, my mom got treatment at the James Cancer Research Hospital here in Columbus, Ohio. because of my connections to New Albany very quickly. And then she was just 25 minutes away. So I was able to be with her all the time throughout this journey. And if I would have been at Gamesburg, I wouldn't have had a front row seat to my mom's journey. So like, all, do you see how in the midst of all of that, that bad, in the midst of all the pain, in the midst of all the grief, like there's light breaking through, like the cracks in life is where the light can break through. And I think it's just a really important, just for us pastor types, I think we want things to be smooth. We want life to be easy. We want like, we just want everything up and to the right. And I want to say, I don't think that's a ministry we're ever going to experience ever again,
right.
Ever. And so how can we model for our people the healthy embrace of suffering, not for the sake of suffering. I mean, come on, Jesus suffered. So do we think we're going to not suffer? Like suffering and recognizing, like even in the midst of grief, there is joy. Even in the midst of pain, there is hope. And not some kind of Pollyanna way, like I'm going to ignore all the pain,
right.
But in a like, let me be gut honest, because in the last 4 years of my life, I have been filleted wide open. And let me tell you, what else can I do? What else can I do? I could be in a corner in a fetal position where I could just keep on living. And I've chosen to keep on living.
Yeah. Matt and I were talking before you got on, just talking, because that's what we do. talking about what it, as pastor types, we show up in the most vulnerable times for people.
Yeah.
That's often what we're called upon to do, right? Occasionally we get fun stuff. We get to show up in the joyous moments. But I would venture to say most often for all of us, it's the vulnerable moments when people are just filleted wide open, right? Mm-hmm. And it's such a different experience when we're the one that's vulnerable and just need people to show up, and they're showing up. You look at the Advent story, it's people at their most vulnerable. And the way that you've presented it, people are showing up in the ways that they do. Even Herod, when Jesus is at his most vulnerable, he shows up and chooses, maybe they're, you know, not great things, but everybody else just showing up in these vulnerable moments to raise up and rise up and celebrate Jesus, right?
Yeah.
And for us, that's how we model that, right? We show up for people in our churches, in our communities, in our families, in all of the places when people are at their most vulnerable. And what a beautiful gift. And truly unlikely gift that people show up for us, right? Because we're the ones they call. And when we can make that phone call, or when people just notice, right? Damn, this has been hard. Let's show up.
Huge. Yeah. And I think there's two things about that. There are two pieces. There are the folk in our life actually showing up and us being vulnerable enough to receive it.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the hard piece for me, because like, I'm Rachel Billups, I'm supposed to have it all together, right. You know? And so like, and that's the most difficult part, where you just have to say no. And let me just say, in this journey, there's been no choice. Mm-hmm. Like I can't go through the things that I've been through and keep it all together, because it's just, it's too messy. It's too hard. It's too complicated for me to not say, no, go ahead and mow my grass. That would be a blessing for you to mow my grass, because I can't do it right now.
Right.
Or go ahead and like fix me dinner, because, you know, or even like, you know, I have friends who are like, do you want to go hang by a fire? I got a glass of wine waiting for you. Yeah, I do. And so I do think there is like, there's a difference between me bleeding all over my people and like sharing. But man, I just need them to know. I mean, it's not unusual for me to say, today I'm just not okay.
Yep.
I'm just not okay. And to be like, look, grief comes in waves. I was talking to Matt the other day, and somehow we got on like Thanksgiving and eating and pies. My mom, like unapologetically, made the best fruit pies on the face of the planet. Her crust was perfect. Like, she's just a master at this. And I like started weeping, because I was like, I'm never going to eat her pies ever again. And I was like, damn it. Like, and just a puddle because of something as simple as a pie. But that's the thing that people don't explain, or like, those are the moments of grief. Like, it's the simple stuff. It's not just, yes, it's Thanksgiving and an empty seat around the table. Yes, it's Christmas. My mom's birthday happens to be December 15th, you know, like, it's all of it. It's all of that. And knowing that she's not physically present with us. There's all of the big things, but the little things are what catch you off guard. And if you are not willing or able, if I'm not willing or able to say, you know what, if I'm just like a total mess one day, I'll say to someone I'm talking to, like, my emotion right now, I don't think is actually about what we're talking about. I think whatever we're talking about here has triggered some deeper grief in me. Mm-hmm. So don't take any of these tears as like what you're saying to me is pissing me off, or that like you've upset me, because you haven't.
Right.
There, you've just tapped into a steep well of grief. And I want you to know, like, I'm going to hold this space and it's going to be awkward for a moment, because I just need to cry it out right now, you know, like, and to be honest with yourself, to be like, well, dag it. I stepped right into that grief well right there. So yeah, that's important.
It is. And to be open and honest about that. Right. Cause we don't do that well, I think, as people, but especially as pastors, we don't do that well.
Yeah, well, it's because we're have it all together. Yeah.
We're reared to, you know, you don't just talk about what's going on in your life. I mean, for me, I'm not gonna lie, one of the blessings of COVID, which I don't know if anybody's ever really heard that, but a blessing of COVID for me was, I was going in a time where, I had been just diagnosed with, issues with my hips. And I could barely walk. And one of the blessings that doing online worship provided us was I didn't have to move a whole lot. And so we set up our sanctuary to a space where I could just stand there and not have to move as much, because nobody realized the amount of pain I was in walking, you know, just even up the stairs, or even like the 3 feet, like I would on a normal Sunday morning for things. And it gave me a space to like, okay, so I'm glad I don't have to like figure out how to hold that back while trying to, you know, be in worship on Sunday morning in the full. And so the blessing for me during COVID was like, I only really had to move like this. And so it was really nice to be in that space. And then, you know, as we would meet people, you know, during come and go communion or any like space like that, that's when I would share, like, they're like, you know, we noticed that, you know, you're not moving as well. I was like, well, here's what's going on. And so, you know, Rachel, you and I, like, listening to your story, like, mirrors a lot of some of the things I've been through these last like 6 years, really seven, no, now nine, sorry. I'd lost my grandfather, who was like someone very close to me. And then, like 6 months later, I lost my mom. And then going through that grief and, you know, leading a church and then being moved to another congregation to, you know, do what I do, you know, helping that congregation through a tough time, and then, oh wait, COVID. And then, like, you know, finding a space in that, I was just resonating really close to your story about understanding like how hard it is to go through those grief moments and like do what we do. Cause like people don't expect us to be, I would just say, you know, having difficulties, like we're supposed to have our stuff.
Human. They don't expect us to be human. Like,
man, if I was the superhuman you would pay me to be, I could do a lot more other things, you know? And I think, you know, that's the one thing I've been thinking about a lot with Advent as we, you know, as we enter into the season. Zach and I both love Blue Christmas. It is very special to us, as we've, you know, we've been doing it now for years, and we've leaned into that fact that, you know, this season, I think we need to also acknowledge the grief. We get really excited about the joy. And maybe that's even the other character that you could talk about, like that we could talk about, like that it really is a part of the nativity. Grief is in that story.
It's baked in.
Yeah. And it's something that we have to wrestle with through this season. We can't just be all, you know, jingle bells and all the good things, that there is grief, whether, you know, and I think that's a great thing to acknowledge, because it does get literally like skirted under the rug. Cause you almost go from All Saints Day, where you talk about dead people, to Christmas. And it's like, you know, it's just, let's not talk about that. I mean, and, you know, I think that that's just a way of thinking with Advent this year to really think about how can you help bring out the grief. So that way those that are grieving during the season, which it is hard, how can you, like, how can we be a presence in the middle of that?
Yeah. And I think, again, in some ways we're leading our folk, with ourselves being vulnerable and being able to have these like really hard conversations. And I just think about the layers of grief, and you've had personal layers, but they're, I mean, my goodness gracious, like you can't watch the news and not be grieving about what's happening in Gaza right now. Like you can't, like, you can't, there's grief centered around like the politics of these United States of America. Like there's grief around the sexism and the racism and all of the isms that we experience on a regular basis. And so there's a lot that I think our people are carrying into every single worship experience, let alone us as leaders. And to like smooth that over, I just wonder how much of that, no wonder people are looking at the church and saying, I don't need more of that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't want bad news every week, but I don't need this like fake positivity that doesn't give me the tools in my toolbox to actually experience my real life.
We would, you know, Bonhoeffer would call that cheap grace.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, and it's remembering that for so many people, it's, you know, we focus on things like All Saints and Blue Christmas and Ash Wednesday and Good Friday as kind of our grieving spaces in the church, and take the intentional time. And it, like Matt said, those are super important to us. But we got to remember that, you know, just on any given Sunday, a hymn drums that up, right?
Yeah.
Or prayer, or just a moment, right? And yeah, to soften that or just graze right past it when you see people grieve, right? When you see that begin to well up them within them on just an ordinary Sunday, not to ignore that and to be mindful of how we present that sacred space and provide space for people to, you know, whether, gosh, I have people in those services, especially Blue Christmas, of, I always expected to be the people in their first year, maybe their second year of grieving someone they've lost. And I often get, gosh, my husband died 30 years ago.
Exactly.
And I come every year. Right.
Yeah.
Because I need this service to get to the next one.
Yeah.
And I'm always, always struck and reminded by that, not only at Blue Christmas, but for me, anytime we sing the Lord of the Dance, mm-hmm. That was the one song my mother-in-law requested. And I don't do it very often because I can't. Right.
Yeah.
But it always reminds me of that's my song for her. Who's it for somebody else? Right.
Yeah.
Who is it? It's Amazing Grace or Silent Night or, you know, anything else. And how do we always do that well and respectful and meaningful for people?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so good.
It's hard. The season's tough.
Yeah.
And I love that you focus on that, you know, because it's easy not to, it's easy just to tell the story again.
Yeah. Now, before we wrap up, I want to tell the rest of my story because I realized I left it like hanging on this expecting the unexpected thing because I went down a tangent. But so what I was saying, we had just had the first eye surgery of my daughter. Mm-hmm. And so we went to the follow-up appointment and I was actually going into a Kroger, a grocery store, to get a gift card for someone who was in need. And so a group of people had got together, put some money in something. I was getting the gift card and the card and I needed to get in and out because I had this little kid who had just had eye surgery and this was her follow-up appointment and I wanted to get in and out and get out of there. And so I was doing my good deed for the day and I was in a hurry and I'm sprinting through the grocery store and trying to find the gift cards. And I hear this woman crying out Like, and I was like, oh, like, I went like this, like, not today, Jesus, not today. Like, and I just kept like walking as fast as I could. And then like, I walked back by her and she's still like crying out. And I'm like, nope, getting my card. And I've done my one good deed for the day. I'm like getting out of here. And I just turn around and I notice the guy next to her, because she's in the self-checkout aisle, is like an elderly gentleman trying to keep her up. And this woman's probably in her 40s. And I'm like, oh, sweet Jesus. And so like, I walk over to her and she like latches on me. And I discover that like, she, you know, she's had a stomach bug and she's like, she's dehydrated and she's not feeling well. And they're calling the ambulance. And I very quickly realize she's a teacher at a local church that has a preschool. And so I get a hold of the director and I work it all out. And she's like, don't leave me. Like, she's gripping me like with everything. Don't leave me. And I'm like, I'm not going to. And I'm just sharing with her, like, I know God's super mindful of you because like, I'm not supposed to be here. I never shop at this Kroger. And so I'm able to just be with her and be present and make sure. Then a couple of her co-teachers walk in and I make sure that I pay for, like, we all pay for groceries and get all the things and get her on her way. And then I actually buy my things, take them into my car and go to the restroom and like clean up my hands and everything. Cause I'm like, this lady's going to get me COVID, like in the middle of Advent, you know? And like, and then I walk back through and there's this, one of the teachers said, look, the EMTs think she's going to the hospital, but just for precaution, they think she's just super dehydrated. Her blood pressure's fine. Everything's fine. And so, but in that moment, I'm like preaching to myself. Like I have an agenda. I like don't want to be interrupted by, and yet in the middle of Kroger, all heaven breaks loose in Advent. Come on. It's in Kroger. It's not in the worship service. It's in Kroger. And I think that's true for all of us. Like we want the holy of holiest moments in church, when in reality, more often than not, the holiest of holy moments are in our everyday living. And so, and that's, I mean, that's what the whole book is about. What's your unlikely Advent? I keep bringing that back around every chapter. Like, what is this for you? Like, what is unlikely about this season of Advent? And will you actually take the time to notice it? Or are you just going to hurry through so you can get to Christmas? So.
Well, thank you so much, Rachel, for your time and your energy and just sharing about your book and being vulnerable and willing to share yourself. I think that that's, you know, important to share. I think it's, you're being authentic and that's what we, that's what we want. And so, yeah, thanks.
Thank you.
We appreciate you. Anything else you want to plug?
Well, certainly I still am really serious about kicking Matt Rohl's butt. So like buy my book and not his. No, I'm just kidding. Buy my book and buy his. I have both of them. So, yeah, I just want to encourage, if you want to find me every day. I pray on Facebook Live. And so find me on Facebook or Instagram or TikTok or any of those places. And I'd love to connect.
It's funny you say that because so I'm doing Matt's book here. My wife works at a church in Denver and they're doing your book in Denver.
so we
split the difference between the two. And, and it was funny because my wife brought that up yesterday. She's like, I know what you're doing for Advent, but here's what we're doing for Advent. Have you ever heard of Rachel Billups? I was like, yeah, I was like, you've been with me long enough to know that we've done at least one of her books, and I've talked about her a couple of times and the great work that she's doing. And she's like, well, it sounds like a really good thing. I said, from what I can tell and what I've read, it looks really good. And, you know, I was like, well, we're interviewing her tomorrow. So just tell your congregation to listen to the podcast. And so she's like, I'll at least make sure Jasper listens to it. I was like, no. Tell your congregation. So yeah, we definitely, thank you for your time. And you have, I extend to you the open invitation. You do have a little bit of ground to make up with Matt Rohl. He's been on 6 times. So you've got like 7 more times to be on. So, I'm sure we can work something out for you to beat him even in that. I think that would be
fantastic.
you know?
Yeah, I have a high competition strength, as you can see.
Well, and we're here for it. We love to like feed that. So,
we are classic enablers.
Oh, that's awesome. Yes.
So we want to thank our listeners for listening. And you can connect with us at beardedtheologians.com, where we've got a lot of great podcasts up and ready for you to listen to. And then you can also pick up some gear to buy for Advent. What a great way of sharing, Advent Christmas gifts than buying Bearded Theologians gifts to share with your loved ones.
With an unexpected gift.
With an unexpected gift. Maybe even unwanted in some circles.
We are the heirs of gifts.
Yes. So for the Bearded Theologians, I'm Matt Franks.
I'm Zach Bechtold. Thanks for checking us out.
I want you to subscribe and like this video and push that thumbs up.
Thank you for listening to the Bearded Theologians podcast. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and share on all social media outlets. You can check out old episodes and more information at beardedtheologians.com. Thanks for checking us out.